America,
the S&P,
the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that's as Australian as football, meat pies, kangaroos and Holden cars. Yes, it's our pre-Australia Day special podcast. And joining me, as always, is Scott Phillips.
G'day, Andrew. G'day, fools. Thanks for listening.
I'm Andrew Page. So today, the latest unemployment figures are out. The news a little bit mixed there. And, of course, Vegemite returns to Australian hands. Next, we talk a bit about foreign ownership. Does it matter? And finally, three Aussie Day-inspired stocks for your portfolio. But first, Scott.
Yes.
Unemployment.
Yes.
We get a little bit of a read on this.
Is that a threat or are you just asking?
Well, you're employed for the moment.
So far,
so while you're here.
At least till the end of the podcast,
at least until the next
while we're in this room, no one can fire me, and that's a good thing.
I do have a kill switch here, so don't get too carried away. So unemployment, we had 13,500 new jobs created.
Excellent.
And that's pretty good.
Yes.
But the unemployment rate went up 5.8%.
How's that possible?
Well, you tell me.
Thanks very much. The answer, Andrew, I happen to know this one. It was a rhetorical question. I'm good at those. Basically, make other people do my work. Look, the unemployment rate went up because more people looked for a job. Now, when we talk about the unemployment rate, many people will think, okay, well, 5.8%, that means 5.8% of Australians are out of work.
Nope.
It's not quite like that. Nope. It's 5.8% of those people who are either employed or actively looking for a job are unemployed.
Right.
There's a whole lot of Australians, I want to say it's something around 4 or 5 million adults, something like that, maybe it's a little bit less, who are happily unemployed. That is, they're either retired, they're students, they're stay-at-home mums or dads, they've won the lotto, and they're not in the labour force. The labour force is the people working and those looking for work, and that's the basis of the statistics. So we say, how many are actively looking for work and can't get one, divided by those people plus everyone with a job.
And just add another wrinkle to that as well. For these statistics, what counts as being employed? I think you only have to work like an hour a week or something to be classed as employed. So there is the difference between unemployed and underemployed.
Correct.
Perhaps a topic for a different day.
So it's how many people want a job and can't get one.
Yep.
And to your point, while they're not included in these stats, there is a real component of the Australian population who would like more hours and can't get them.
Well, we can split up the employment numbers a little bit further as well. So we had 9,300 full-time jobs were added, which is great news, but also an increase in the part-time positions, 4,200 extra jobs there as well. Now, if you look, this is for the month, if you look back over the last year, we had almost 121,000 more people working part-time than they were a year ago.
Right.
Great news. However, on the full-time front, 35,000 odd people less are working full-time. So let's draw a line under this, Scott. Good, bad, indifferent, what's your read?
Yes, all of the above. No, I'm kidding. Look, so here's the thing, right? It's right, and you are spot on. So our workforce is becoming more casualized, and that's crappy if you want a full-time job and can't get one. If you've got to work 40 hours of casual work a week rather than a full-time permanent job, you can't get a bank loan, you probably can't get a car loan. You know, you want a full-time job. And so those who want a full-time job should be able to get one in a perfect world. Mm. That's not perfect. On the flip side, there are more jobs being created for more people. And if that means more part-time work on the way to full-time work, then the flexibility of the labour force is actually a net positive more often than not, albeit with unintended consequences.
I think you have to also put a bit in context as well. You know, there's been a lot of headlines written, a lot of people talking about the end of the mining boom as well. So the fact that we've actually got 5.8% unemployment and these kinds of numbers, you know, obviously these things can always be better. But in that context, it ain't half bad, is it?
Mate, if you'd have told us in 2011 there was going to be an almighty commodities price crash coming, there are going to be a truckload of people put out of work in the mining industry and the associated industries like mining services and cartage and haulage and everything that goes with that, right? If you'd have said, we're going to get through this and only have 5.8% unemployment, you would have signed up on the spot. Yeah. I would have signed up for 6.5%.
Yeah.
If they'd have told me this is coming
and
we'll cap unemployment at 6.5% 5 years later, I would have said, absolutely, please give it to me because it's going to be worse than that.
Yep.
To escape from that with 5.something is an absolute miracle. Again, not for those people impacted, but for the economy as a whole, to get through without that sort of collapse is fantastic.
I should mention as well that the economist boffins will generally consider 5% as full employment.
Right, right.
People can be between jobs and all other kinds of things. So it rarely, in fact, almost never gets better than that. And if you get 5%, that is considered as good as it gets. So 5.8%, pretty decent.
And below 5%, by the way, is not only full employment, but that's when the economists have to worry about inflation.
Yes.
So if we're at 5%, all of us can demand more from our bosses, which is great for us. The problem is the bosses then want to put prices up, then we demand more, then prices go up, then we demand more.
Bit of a vicious circle.
That's how you end up with massive inflation, so we want to avoid it. One last stat to leave you with, Andrew.
Okay.
We talk about these job numbers like they're real, okay? They are at best real approximations.
Yes.
So our colleague Joe Mager, who now runs Lakehouse Capital, which is an affiliated company of The Motley Fool, tweeted yesterday when the results were out, and he said, "Reminder on today's Aussie total employment numbers. The ABS's confidence interval, which means based on the guesses and the surveys they do,
nerd alert,
their confidence interval ranged from a loss of 45,000 jobs to a gain of 72,000 jobs.
So I'll translate if I can.
Go for it.
So what Mr. Mager is saying here is that there is a degree of uncertainty in these numbers.
Yes.
Just the nature of statistics. So what they're really saying is that they're certain of these numbers within 95%, but that 5% room for error means that it actually could have been, to your point, I forgot the numbers you said, but it could have actually been a loss or an increase.
There's a range of 100,000 jobs in that range. And just for what it's worth, we talk about climate change in other contexts. Scientists are more sure about climate change than the ABS is sure about the job numbers.
Isn't
so just take it with a bit of a grain of salt. Like anything, the trend matters far, far more than the monthly numbers.
Yeah, and look, it's better than nothing, right?
Let's move on.
Motley Fool Money. For more, go to fool.com.au/MMM.
We've got to talk about Vegemite.
Oh,
are you a Vegemite man?
I'm a happy little Vegemite, Andrew.
Me too. I'm like Kenny from the movie. I like really thick, heaps of butter, and really, really thick.
Now, mate, you know a little bit about me because we had breakfast before this podcast this morning, and you saw me put plenty of Vegemite on my toast. But I'm not a butter. I'm not
How
a butter guy.
How do you do
guy.
It? It's, oh, look, I love my Vegemite, but it's the combination with the butter
I do,
that makes it.
I have to. I do love both, but just an absolute thick sludge of Vegemite on top of my toast. I'm more than happy. Bread roll, sandwich, whatever. Give me some really good Vegemite or some really good bread, either some nicely hot toasted bread or some really thick white bread. Mate, I'm in heaven. That's
isn't
all
it,
I need.
Isn't it great? Absolutely. I also love too, whenever we get like a US president out here or a US celebrity, there's always, you know, a talk show host, they'll always say, try this. And, you know, we just love the reaction from the Yanks biting into Vegemite.
I don't get to watch the footy show all that often, but I did see one where Bo Ryan actually had The Rock. The actor wrestler actually tastes some Vegemite. Kevin Hart, the comedian, both at the same time. It was fantastically funny. They call it actual grease, and probably for some decent reason.
Yeah.
There's not many people around the world that do love our Vegemite, but it's their loss, our gain. Well, I maintain
it
that.
It really sort of gained a foothold in Australia because I think they gave it to the troops, didn't they, in World War II as a source of vitamin B.
That would be right. Well, you know what? So just a quick aside, without going too far off the track.
It is a money podcast. Right. Bear with us.
So let's talk about World War II and Vegemite, shall we?
Okay.
It turns out there's a wide range of or a belief that Australian POWs actually survived better in the POW camps because they got Vegemite in their rations from the Red Cross, which contained vitamin B.
Isn't that brilliant?
So that's the I won't say it's scientifically proven, but it's certainly the belief both amongst those who observe this stuff and actually the soldiers themselves that the Vegemite actually helped them survive the war in, well, they all went through absolute hell, but in slightly better shape than some of the soldiers from other countries who didn't have that in their rations.
Eat more Vegemite is the lesson there. So, okay, let's have a look at this from a business angle. Australian company got sold off a while ago. Sold off to Kraft?
Yes, many, many years ago.
And then Kraft spun off its operations into, I can never pronounce this, Mondelez?
Right, so Kraft is a US food maker.
Yep.
Because the bloody knucklehead financial types at Kraft decided, you know what, we can create more value by splitting this company into two, and just because they wanted to. So the US business was still called Kraft.
Yep.
And the subsidiary or the spun-off business was called Mondelez. It retained a perpetual right to the brands, but was a separate company, and that was basically outside the US for most of the company's products. So the split's irrelevant. But anyway, so the business was formerly known as Kraft International, is now Mondelez.
Yep.
And it's saying, guys, we really don't want Vegemite. We don't want Kraft peanut butter. We don't want Bonox. We don't want Zoosh. Well, we'll sell it all to Bega.
Okay. And Bega...
The cheese and dairy company? It's
cheese and Vegemite, right? Match made in heaven.
Go.
Match made in heaven.
It was distant.
And the
shares are up 15% yesterday on the news.
Happy so little Vegemite.
Here we go. Boom.
Beat you to it.
You're welcome, fools.
We need the theme song playing there, don't we? So 460 million Bega's ponied up for this.
Yes, that's a lot of Vegemite.
Hell of a lot of Vegemite there. And the news was pretty warmly received, particularly from the Pollies and the rest. It's like, it's great. It's coming back to Australian hands.
It's got to be good, right?
We'll come back to this point, but I don't know if it really makes much of a difference, frankly. But is this a good move for Bega?
I think it's a great move for Bega, Andrew, with the possible question about the amount of money they're paying. Not even the price per se, just the sheer chunk of change. They're holding over $500 million to buy. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Look, it makes sense for Bega because Bega's a dairy company and all they do is milk and cheese.
Yep.
Effectively, all they do is milk and cheese. And they a very, very large chunk of their business is what we call private label. In other words, that's the stuff they sell to Woolies and Coles, cheap as chips. They put their own label on it and sell it as Coles brand or Woolworths brand or something else, right?
Yep.
Now, that's a really, really difficult position to be in if you're a food supplier because Woolies and Coles are the big, big gorillas in the room,
They will squeeze you.
And they And you can't, frankly, they can't afford not to have that business. In fact, Bega lost one of the contracts last year and the shares fell about 15%. Yeah. So the rise on the Vegemite news only just gets them back square with where they were 6 months ago before the news was out. So if you're a dairy company, you're already selling a volatile commodity and you're selling most or a large chunk of your business to supermarkets for cheap prices, that's a very, very, I won't say dangerous place, but it's a very, you're trying to be very bit careful. It can be very volatile. It can really see your business go from highs and lows, peaks and troughs.
Yeah.
Buying a quality repeat purchase food business like the Kraft grocery business they're buying gives them some basically ongoing demand, stable demand, high quality brands. So they've gone from being a cheese and dairy company relying on supermarkets and commodity prices to now being a diversified branded grocery supplier with multiple brands, multiple categories, and frankly, a much less volatile business in the peanut butter, Vegemite, Bonox business than their core business. So it gives them breadth, it gives them depth, and it gives them a lack of volatility.
And those brands are valuable too. There are other versions of Vegemite. Dick Smith's is the one that springs to mind.
Aussie Mite. Yes.
Doesn't come even close in my humble opinion.
Not even close.
Although if I did a blind taste test, maybe I wouldn't even know the difference.
I would guarantee you'll know the difference.
Yeah, I've never tried it. So that's how strong my brand loyalty is.
And of course there's Marmite from overseas and Promite and God knows what else.
I do like a bit of Promite, I've got to tell you.
Get out. Get out.
So
this is a Vegemite. This is a Vegemite podcast. Only. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
All right. That's heresy.
I shouldn't have said that.
Exactly.
So here's the thing I thought of with this deal is although it helps diversify, although it's really great brands and all that kind of stuff. The trouble is it's an extraordinarily mature market.
Yes.
That people have tried to bring Vegemite to the world. I think the only place we sell that outside of Australia is to a small expat community in London.
California in the US and Earl's Court in London is about where it sells. Exactly.
That's the only place. Yes, and no matter, you can be, you can be the Don Draper of the marketing world and you are never, ever going to convince Chileans or, Yanks or any of it to eat this kind of stuff. So there's no growth in any of this.
When you look for the words acquired taste in the dictionary, there is a photo of Vegemite.
That's the
definition of acquired taste.
So that is that a concern for you, the fact that you probably get, broadly speaking, your growth in this with Vegemite is going to be population growth, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Look, I think, we always say with any investment, it's obviously the business you're buying, but also the price you're paying.
Yep.
Vegemite is, it's a zero growth business. It might grow at population, it might not. Frankly, fewer people are having bread, so maybe there's even less Vegemite being sold as a result.
Yeah, right.
There are some trends going against it. This is not going to be but you're not buying this to be the next growth business, right? No. They're buying this because they want the profits, they want the scale, they want the diversification.
Recurring.
That's what makes it worth buying. To the point before, they're paying $500 million for the $460 million for the Kraft business. It's a very, very large bite to swallow. This is, we talk about company transforming deals that companies like to trumpet. I don't know if they've used that phrase, but this literally is because it's such a big thing and such a different business for them.
Yeah.
I think it just makes sense on all those levels. I think if you're a bigger shareholder, you'd want to be happy that they're simply taking a more diversified view and they're becoming a large Australian grocery player because they're more competitive. Negotiating power, I should say, with Woolies and Coles. It gives them more protection against competition. This is a good deal, I think, for them. Over time, we'll find out whether the price is worth paying. Yeah. We should also mention they lose the Kraft brand, at least at this stage, in December 2017. So Vegemite will no longer be Kraft Vegemite, it'll be Vegemite.
Yep.
The big question is things like Kraft peanut butter, for example.
Yeah.
There can only be Kraft peanut butter. You take Kraft off, peanut butter is just peanut butter. So they've got to do something with that. They're trying to negotiate with Mondelez and Kraft to keep that brand.
Yes.
And maybe they can with some sort of licensing deal.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of risk around that. This won't necessarily be a financial slam dunk. The good thing is, by the way, it's earnings accretive from day one. That's nice. Adding to the bottom line straight away.
Yeah.
This is a story that they're going to have to be a little bit careful. But if they even come out almost roughly flat, just the extra diversification and volatility protection, I think shareholders should be happy with it.
A bit more of a stable business.
Indeed.
So quickly, buy, sell, or hold for Bega?
Oh, I would hold that. I wouldn't have bought it before the deal.
No.
I like the company better after the deal. I'm not sure I love the current share price.
Yeah.
How about you?
I'm just, look, the thing is with any kind of dairy operation, there's agricultural businesses are very, very tough at the best of times. So for me, I never say never with those businesses, but I like a really big fat discount. And you know, you can overanalyze this kind of stuff, but when I sort of look at the price, particularly post the Vegemite deal with up 15% extra, I just don't see a burning desire to race out and buy the shares, particularly with the growth prospects and that they have. So
I actually like the craft grocery business much more than I like the big business, quite frankly.
Yeah, totally.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
So the other dimension to this is the fact that it's coming back to Australia.
Aussie.
Oi, oi, oi.
There we go.
So we've seen a whole bunch of global multinationals pick up, you know, iconic Aussie brands. Yes. There's been Arnott's, Foster's, although I've never met an Australian that drinks Foster's.
But it's the whole Foster's, it's the old Carlton United Breweries portfolio. So it's VB, Carlton Draft, Melbourne Bitter, Great Northern, you go the whole sway through that whole range,
Yep, absolutely. It's kind of the similar. No one in Mexico drinks Corona, and no one in Holland drinks Heineken, or you know.
But by God, we eat Vegemite.
But don't we? What? So we've had Foster's, we've had Arnott's, Uncle Toby's is another one, and Aeroplane Jelly.
Yes,
they are no longer in Australian hands.
Tui's,
right? Gone. Okay, so that's gone as well. So and it's a very emotive topic. But I think all we need to do is bring a little bit of some facts to the table and sort of try and look at this as clearly as we can.
Throw in one more, Andrew. Chesty Bond. Gone.
Oh, Chesty Bonds,
owned by the Yanks.
Yes, of course.
Give us some perspective.
Okay, so with this deal, we'll focus on the Vegemite bigger thing for a moment.
Good idea.
How many extra jobs are we going to create through this deal?
Add one, divide by two, carry the zero.
Zero. Absolutely. It was already being manufactured here, right?
Correct.
What about the fact that the profits are now coming back to an Australian company?
It's got to be good, right?
Well, I don't know.
So here's the thing. They spent $460 million to capture whatever profits they're going to make ongoing. So they paid out $500 million to get back something. We don't actually know what the number is. Call it.
I think the whole deal, they're expecting an operating profit of $45 million.
So that's all about 10% profit, right? Yep. So they've effectively paid 10 years' profit to someone else to get perpetual profits from the company.
Yep.
So, you know, yeah, the profits came back, but they didn't come back cost-free. We actually paid, or Bega paid, for those profits to be returned to Australia. So is it a net benefit? Well, it kind of depends on your view. And this is where we kind of move from economics to patriotism, nationalism, call it what you want. This is where it gets a little bit crowded. Everyone instinctively wants good stuff at home.
Yeah.
You know, we want to be proud of the country. We want things like that to be here. We just asked the question, you know, was it worth Bega paying $460 for Vegemite? Well, it brings the brand back home, but if Bega doesn't make money from the deal, then they've actually wasted that money. In fact, they would have been better to leave their money at home and leave the profits overseas rather than paying up right now for the future profits.
Even
of the
if they make windfall profits off it, right? It goes to Bega shareholders. That's not that's not something that's shared amongst the whole country. And, So I guess there's that perspective.
Foreign ownership is it's a really funny one, Andrew, and it comes, you know, Australian made, Australian owned, all that stuff. You know, in a perfect world, well, not even a perfect world, there are people who would say, well, we want to buy Australian made products because we like to support our own.
Yep.
We want to buy Australian owned products because we like to support our own. That all makes plenty of sense, except there's a whole lot of Australian companies that are doing business overseas.
Yes.
And we'll talk about some of those a bit later, but let's pick a couple. BHP Billiton, right?
Yep.
Mostly at least Australian by origin.
Yep.
Most of its mines are overseas. Mm. Most of its coal and iron and silver and zinc and whatever else it makes sold overseas.
Mm.
Now, if you don't like foreign trade, then you're really saying you don't want BHP to be successful.
Yeah.
Now, people say, oh, no, I want BHP to be successful. I just don't want to buy the stuff from over there. Mm. It's like, well, you don't get to have just one way of this, right?
You've got to look at it holistically, don't you? There is a trade-off here. So like the Holden Carr example was a great example.
Perfect example.
So, and we talked about it previously on the podcast. It's horrible. There's no way we just want to gloss over this. A whole bunch of people lost their jobs, and that is bad.
And some of those people are going to really struggle to get new jobs because they're very specialized.
There's no way you put a positive spin on that.
Right.
But then when you look at it as someone who's running the country should, and you're looking for the net value to the country.
Good. Correct.
You know, when we focus on things that we're good at, what an economist would call what we have a comparative advantage in.
Perfect.
It means that we get to buy cars cheaper because we're buying it off the Japanese or someone else who are able to produce it much, much, much more efficiently.
Yes.
So on balance, we're better off because our goods become cheaper And the people who bear the brunt of that, unfortunately, are the workers. But as a percentage of the population, it's very small.
And if we do our best to look after those people specifically, make sure they're okay, then it is a net positive, right?
This is the danger with what Trump's talking about, right, in the US as well. He'll cater to some interest groups and they'll be better off. But on balance, most Americans will be worse off with some very restrictive trade policies.
We talked about bonds earlier, Andrew. We used to manufacture bonds, undies and socks here in Australia. Yep. And everyone said, I want Australian made, I want Australian, and I'll buy Australian stuff. Except
no one did, right? I'm going to go buy the cheap overseas stuff.
You're buying $4 shirts from Kmart rather than $25 shirts from bonds.
Yep.
What does that do? It means that we're making a decision with our own wallets, and the government there is not there to prop up the difference. So you can say for all you want, well, I want Australian made, I want Australian owned.
And all else being equal, absolutely, right?
Well, that's the thing, right? So you can buy 5 T-shirts from Kmart for $4 each, mm-hmm. or 1 Bonds T-shirt for $20. Now, assuming those 5 T-shirts last even a day longer than the other one you could have bought from Bonds together, you're ahead. And that's the thing about the benefit to Australians is the living standard which we enjoy are much, much improved. 25 years ago, we had massive tariffs on cars. Mm. We drove around in early generation Commodores and Falcons and Kingswoods. Mm. They were wonderful cars in it with a nostalgic rose-coloured view background.
Yeah.
But the cars that we're made and buying in Australia now are much, much, much better because of foreign trade, and they're significantly cheaper.
Yeah.
And that's the story, right? We're getting cheaper TVs, we're getting cheaper cars, we're getting cheaper, whatever we buy from overseas is coming much, much cheaper than we could make it here ourselves. That means I've got more money left at the end of the day after I buy my car or TV or whatever I'm buying to go and buy something else, either made in Australia or made overseas. So our standard of living is far, far higher because of international trade than it would be without it. Even if it means we have to see Australian brands go overseas, even if it means there's occasional job losses.
Yeah, I think President Xi, is it? I can't. The
Xi, yep.
Xi, thank you. They're all over in Davos at the moment talking trade. And he said it very nicely. You can lock yourself in a room. Mm-hmm. He's talking about trade here. And you block out the wind and the rain. Mm-hmm. But you also leave out the air and the light. That's a wonderful proverb,
Nice.
It can, it's really, really cool. And I think, it's sort of a very direct sort of message to sort of Trump there.
Yes.
But I think that's the thing you've got to look at here. It's about the greater good. And I think virtually all of the economists around the world would argue that on a net basis, we are better off.
There's almost no serious economist who would say that foreign trade, global trade, globalization is a net negative for anybody on a holistic scale.
It generally makes individual people who lose. Countries richer.
Right. Yep. There are people who lose out of globalization, absolutely.
Yeah.
Our job as a caring side is to look after those people.
Totally.
But we're all better off as a group because of it. And the same with anything. Anything government does. A new road goes somewhere through something. Stage of the castle, right? Mm. There are things that have to be done by governments because they're in the greater good. And sometimes individual people suffer for that, and that's unavoidable. It's not awesome, but that's exactly how a kind of communal democracy works. That's exactly the pact we make with each other, which is, I might have to inconvenience you, Andrew, I'll look after you, but there is 25 million Australians, there's one of you, and I'm sorry, mate, if this is kind of negative for you, I'm going to try and help you fix it, but we need to push ahead because the other 24 million people need their lives improved as well.
Well, that's our ideology, painted up on the wall, and I'm going to be absolutely firm on that until my job goes overseas, and then I'm going to start totally disagreeing with it.
No, different. Investment professionals should absolutely be in Australia.
They should be in Australia.
There's a very, very clear case for
absolutely
that.
Absolutely different.
We want tariffs, we want border protections. Put up the walls.
Exactly.
Donald Trump, Mr. Trump, it's Scott Phillips. Mate, we'd like a wall manufacturer's name, please, if you wouldn't mind.
Pass it on.
We're building around the studio as we speak.
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
So Australia Day stock picks.
Yes.
Australia Day is coming up. We thought let's have a look across the ASX. What are some companies that are really taking it to the world, really can make us proud as Australians, we are a very, very small fish in the global economic ocean.
We're about 2% of the world's 2%. Stock
markets. 2%. We punch above our weight, goddammit. And hit me off with the first Aussie stock that we should be proud of.
That's funny, we weren't thinking about this when we set it up, but after the last conversation, it just occurs to me that all of these companies are successful because of foreign trade, because they can actually go overseas and do their thing, right?
Yep,
which wasn't our intent, but just an interesting,
nice segue.
Interesting side. Look, there are some great Australian companies doing it overseas. One of the best and best examples, frankly, is Cochlear.
Yeah.
Now, Cochlear make the cochlear implants, funnily enough. Mm. These are the kind of miracles of modern technology that allow people who have got hearing impairment or is literally profoundly deaf to actually hear. If you haven't seen them, do yourself a favor, YouTube, Google, whatever you need to do. Mm. A little kid who gets a cochlear implant can hear its mother for the first time. It will give you chills, I promise you.
It doesn't.
It is just spectacular. This is developed in Australia, originally made in Australia. I'm not sure where they're made now, but certainly designed in Australia, developed in Australia, based in Australia. These cochlear implants sell all over the world, and they are helping hundreds of thousands of people here who otherwise wouldn't have, couldn't. The technology keeps improving year after year after year. Just a spectacular piece of technology, a spectacular Australian success story, and a company we think you can buy at today's prices.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, it's one of those ones you don't want to overthink because the quality is so exceptional. And we should mention here too, this isn't just a company that's holding its own on the world stage. This is a company that is the leader,
this is a world beater,
undisputed leader. You look, you can go anywhere to buy implants, but if you want the best and the best of the best,
you go to Cochlear.
You go to Cochlear, and anyone who's been a shareholder of Cochlear for a while will know just how rewarding it can be. Do you remember they had a recall not that long ago?
I do. The shares went down to $55.
They just got decimated because look, any manufacturer has a recall from time to time. They had one, and it was just that deal of a lifetime, wasn't it?
Share price now?
$128.19 as I look at my screen. Can I tell you how smart I was, Scott?
Please.
I bought a bunch when it was down.
Congratulations.
Not at the very bottom. Yeah,
well done.
Genius.
So how much money have you made now?
Well, it got up, I think it got up to about $60 or so.
Yeah, and then it kept going.
And it did, but yeah. I sold out because that's how smart I am. I thought, what a quick win. Look how smart I am.
Dear
and,
dear.
You know, it's a lesson I've had many times and I do struggle to learn it, which is the money is made in the holding and not in the trading.
Amen,
and
sir.
I should have just kept them in the bottom drawer. I would have been far better off. Anyway,
speaking of long-term success stories, tell me about the organization that used to be called the Commonwealth Serum Laboratory.
Commonwealth Serum Laboratory is another one in the sort of broader healthcare space, CSL Limited.
That's
They're
the
also above $100 a share, $111 at this as I speak.
Right.
These guys, they make blood products. So there's a whole...
That's very Frankenstein-esque.
Yeah, well, they do wonderful things.
Right.
They make products that improve the lives of a lot of people.
And vaccines, by the way. Gardasil vaccine, the cancer vaccine by CSL.
Yep. And a gazillion products. And they get more and more products every year.
Yeah, literally a gazillion?
A gazillion, yeah.
Who knew it went that high?
It does.
All right.
And they've got that many. And they take in blood. Blood's got a gazillion things. another gazillion things
I hope
in
you're
it.
Counting at home here, Phils.
And they're able to sort of fractionalize that and do some very clever biotechnological techniques to that, and they can provide more products. It has wonderful pricing power.
You're the kind
of person who's in the market for this kind of thing, and you need it. They can charge, there's huge pricing power there.
These are life-sustaining, life-improving, life-saving technologies.
Yeah, and it's another company that has just done incredibly well over the long term. If you bear with me very quickly, I'll give you a very interesting stat. Over the last 10 years, shareholders would have compounded their wealth at 19.3% per annum. They would have doubled their money about every 3 years.
All right, Andrew. I'm going to finish this off with one that I know and like very much, and I'll declare a shareholding in this company. So take that with a grain of salt, fools. The company is Corporate Travel Management. It's a corporate travel manager, funnily enough. I don't know how they came up with the name, but it turns out it helps businesses make travel bookings, manage their accounts, manage their travel policies. It basically makes it easier and cheaper for companies to send their employees around the country and around the world on airplanes and find hotels for them to stay at.
Wait, they're a travel agent?
They're basically a travel agent.
How come most people wouldn't have heard of these guys?
Because they only work in businesses.
Ah.
So they are just for the business sector.
Yep.
If you own a small, medium, large business, they'll come to you and say, look, here, let me manage your travel for you.
Yep.
We'll manage the bookings, we'll manage the reporting, we'll manage the permissions and approvals, we'll make it all happen. We're there if you need somebody. And it's all done online. They have done a spectacular job of growing here in Australia. They have fantastic success stories right around the country and now right around the world. They're now in the US, they're in Asia, they're in the UK, they're in Europe. Corporate Travel Management, 25-year success story, probably about 5 years or so on the ASX, have done a really wonderful job over a very long period of time, and more recently over a shorter period of time. The share price has absolutely rocketed because they're getting it done. They are beating the guys overseas. They're beating the UK travel managers, the Asian travel managers, they're beating the US travel managers. They're building a business and making their customers happy. You won't have heard of Corporate Travel Management before, probably, but it is one of the best little businesses on the ASX, getting bigger quite quickly.
I'll give you another stat.
Tell me.
These guys have averaged for shareholders,
yes,
so dividends and capital gains combined, 60% per year on average over the last 5 years.
You'd take that.
You did take it. You were smarter than me, and you didn't lock in a quick profit.
We did recommend it to our members at about $2.50 or $2.60. It's now about $18. So they've done pretty well. I will say not every one of our recommendations goes quite so well, but we're pretty proud of that.
God, I wouldn't, if only.
Can we finish this off?
We better finish it off. Fools, as always, thanks for your company. We always enjoy doing this. Scott, thanks to you as well.
Thank you, Andrew.
Remember, you can subscribe, and we hope you do. Go to the iTunes store or go to your favorite Android podcast app. And as we always ask, it'd be ever so kind if you could give us a nice big fat 5 stars there. But until next time, Fool on.
Happy Australia Day and fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services Licence 400691.